Welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm your host for today, Becky Friedman. And with me in the studio, I'm so pleased to have both Lombardos. Bridget, how are you today?
I am great. Happy to be here.
And Dan.
I am well.
Well, we're really excited for this episode of Ask an Atheist because we've got a lot of listener feedback that we haven't had in kind of a long time. We always can get voicemails at 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. But in the meantime, let's start with some listener emails who have emailed us at questions@atheist.radio. And this one comes to us from Megan from Texas, who asks, is poo-pourri worth the money? Bridget?
Well, I did have a couple of campers bring some to Camp Quest Northwest. I think it was last summer, maybe the summer before. And it was definitely appreciated by the general population. It definitely cut down on some of the bathroom stink. In that case, I definitely, when you have a lot of people using the bathroom, it could be useful, beneficial. But I don't know that I would purchase it for myself necessarily.
Now, I think this might actually come into play in terms of an atheist question. Now, Megan might just be kind of, playing with us, but, is there a science behind poo-pourri? Because, is this just a product that, is scamming people that aren't thinking critically about it? Or is there something actually to this?
No, it's a thing that works. When it comes to, is it worth the money? Well, then I'd have to ask the question, are you willing to DIY instead?
So, how do you DIY some poo-pourri, Dan?
We'll get there. So poo-pourri works basically by making a chemical barrier between the water and the air. So normally you'd have the vapor pressure of water carrying aromatics from your feces, and that's what's making the air stink around the toilet. But if you have a thin chemical layer, like, say, an oil that covers the surface of the water, it prevents that vapor from making it through the barrier. So is it worth the money? Well, it depends. Are you willing to fill a spray bottle with cooking oil and use that instead? What is the cost of the spray bottle and cooking oil versus what is the cost of the poo-pourri? Assuming your time is worth something and not nothing. That's really sort of an economic argument that you're going to have to make from your own perspective. But does a product like this actually function? Yeah, it does.
Okay, so Megan from Texas, there you go with your poo-pourri. You might be being scammed economically, but there is a real science behind it. We also get emails that's feedback about things that we've said in past episodes. And actually, Camilo from Quebec emailed us to say a word about the graffiti found on a South Carolina church that said "Se vaya con el diablo." And this actually references in South Carolina, there was some graffiti that was purported to be satanic in nature and cursing Billy Graham, and it was also in Spanish. But we were kind of wondering, is this really a native speaker, someone trying to maybe frame or cast aspersions on Spanish speakers? And Camilo says, well, I was right. The grammar of the phrase is flawed. Moreover, it's not a minor error nor a spelling mistake. No native speaker would construct such a phrase. The original expression "vaya con Dios" is an established way to wish well to another person. That's go with God. So while grammatically legal, adding the word "say" doesn't sound quite right. It seems rather that it was made by an automated translator, and it would be equivalent to saying in English, "yourself go with the devil." So, this kind of using graffiti to try and frame someone else from a different kind of group or someone that might already have a lot of, bad notions associated with your group, not cool.
So I want to be clear here. We are suggesting the very likely possibility that the graffiti on this particular church was a false flag operation, or perhaps more specifically, a false tag operation. Is that,
yes,
that's
yes.
What's going on? Okay.
False tag. Trying to no. Really, yes, that is what we are suggesting, and other listeners have also said yes. I think we're in agreement here. But the bottom line is that many Satanists who are part of the Satanic Temple are also atheistic and humanistic in nature, and to try and mix that with folks that are also Spanish speaking, that's just taking two maligned groups in a place like a South Carolina church and saying these must be the culprits. And I think that's a really nasty thing to do.
Right. And there's no way it could possibly be somebody trying to sort of put that blame on someone else. That's never happened.
No, certainly not in the history of, you know, minority viewpoint people or, you know, minority cultures.
And I do also want to point out that, of course, Becky was correct, because, I mean, she would be. Out of anybody here, she would be.
Please have it be noted that I did not prompt Bridget to say that.
But that was my first thought when I was reading this email. I was just like, well, of course she was right. If anybody's going to be right about that, it's going to be Becky.
I will say that as someone who learned Spanish, you know, at a young age, but still had to learn it as my non-dominant language, there's always room to improve and know the different varieties of language use in your native language or in a learned language. So there is that.
Just take the compliment, Becky. Yeah. Just take it.
Thank you, Bridget. That was very sweet of you. So at this particular church, we had, you know, satanic messages and, you know, painted here. But, you know, where it's often as equally ill-fitting as satanic messages on the side of a church, I find Christian monuments in the middle of government property. How about you guys?
Definitely not something I want to see on public property.
Well, you're in luck, because the American Legion was actually dealt a blow this week when the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals denied the request to review the court's October ruling regarding a World War I monument on a public Maryland highway median strip. A 3-judge panel last year ruled that the 40-foot cross violates the U.S. Constitution by excessively entangling the government in religion and aggrandizing the Latin cross to the point where a reasonable observer would conclude that the Maryland National Capital Park and Planning Commission, who owns and maintains the cross, endorses Christianity. While the American Humanist Association's legal division is pleased with the development, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan called the ruling an affront to all veterans. And the American Legion vowed to appeal the case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So I remember we first reported on this back in October.
Because I couldn't believe that a 40-foot cross would be seen as, oh, no, that's not religious. It's just an enormous cross that everybody sees from the highway. No, nobody's going to think that that's an, you know, religious symbol. It's a 40-foot cross.
It's a 40-foot cross.
They said, oh, no, but the 45 or so people that died in World War I from this town, their names are in a plaque at the bottom of it. Because you can see that so easily from a highway. Right. No, you definitely see the names of the people and not the 40-foot cross.
The return of the 40-foot cross.
That, like, 70-foot woman?
50-foot woman.
50-foot?
50-foot woman, yeah.
I'm getting a little overambitious with a... Would a 50-foot woman be an endorsement of... No, that's not... Okay, so this...
Depends on the religion, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Which woman?
I don't know, but I think that it might result in death by snoo-snoo.
Oh, dear.
So you have this cross, right? And the 3-judge panel said, yeah, I think that the American Humanist Association is right. This gives a reasonable observer the impression that, you know, this place is maintained by the government and the government is, you know, erecting crosses places. And American Legion said, please let your entire, you know, panel hear it. And they said, no, we really don't think that we need to.
And that I mean, that makes perfect sense that they wouldn't want to waste their time. I mean, if they're really insisting that this cross needs to stay, then they need to propose alternatives to, you know, if they really don't want to tear it down, figure out a way to be able to honor the soldiers that died that were of other religions or maybe non-religious, like put up a you know, 40-foot Adam or like Star of David.
But Bridget,
whatever.
Hold on a sec. This is World War I, and we knew that everyone who fought in World War I was clearly a Christian. Oh, wait, wasn't it World War I that it was said that God died in the trenches? We conveniently forget about that thing, right? you could say let's capitalize on this by creating more memorials that are more diverse and have different symbols to it. Yeah. You could say let's move this 40-foot cross to private property.
Right.
How about a 40-foot monument to the futility of war?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Would that be an affront to all veterans?
I don't think so.
I mean, all of the veterans that I know would find this 40-foot cross to be an affront. So, right. I mean, if you're a veteran and you have a differing opinion, let us know.
And I want to be clear, we're not talking about a monument to veterans who fought in it and then later died, you know, in the old soldiers' home or with their families. This is a monument to the persons who died in during the war. So if anybody should have an opinion on the futility of war, I imagine those killed during one of the most futile wars of the last 1,000 years might have something to say about it.
They might. There also might be veterans that have something to say to Larry Hogan. I want to go back to that for a minute. The fact that an appeals court said, hey, this enormous cross, unconstitutionally entangles religion and government, that is offensive to all veterans. I think that there are enough veterans, and we've had them on this show. We've had them on, you know, in public office, saying that, hey, the soldier who wore the uniform of this country, oftentimes fights for the ability of others to practice their own religions and fights to uphold our Constitution. And if our Constitution says you can't endorse religion as a government, I think that they would have the wherewithal to see that this is not an affront, that the existence of the cross itself on government land is the affront to the Constitution that they purported to uphold through their military service.
Completely agree. Yeah.
I think also the mere existence of Military Association of Agnostics and Freethinkers would prove to Governor Hogan that this isn't an affront to all veterans, right? I mean, unless you do have some atheist veterans that are there saying, no, we really want a cross. Like, we like crosses and everything.
Maybe they're just a fan of the lowercase letter T. I don't know.
Maybe they just like right angles.
I'm not sure, but I think that this is a good ruling. It's a good news for, the American Humanist Association. But I don't know what's going to happen if they do appeal this to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court takes it up. The dissenting members of the circuit court said, hey, you know what, we really should revisit this because it has implications for all things across the country. I think that's an okay thing. We can examine whether all monuments across the country that are government monuments should have these crosses instead of having all of these little suits here and there. You know, maybe we should look at it once and for all.
Maybe it would be worth it to have a final answer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a word for this in legal terms. It's precedent.
Precisely. And you'd think that we'd be okay with that. And I think that as atheists, I think we'd be disappointed if the precedent were set that crosses are perfectly legal everywhere. And I think that would be upsetting because it would embolden many, religious individuals to then utilize public property to erect symbols of religion.
Yeah, maybe let's wait on having this go to the federal Supreme Court until we have a slightly better outcome.
So another really neat victory for some atheists through legal means actually comes from Wisconsin. This is the father of a Kenosha, Wisconsin fourth grader has succeeded in making a teacher remove classroom decorations that linked patriotism with Christian symbols and religious messages. Rob Moore's child sat for months in a classroom where the sign of the cross, the motto "In God We Trust," a poster listing vices and virtues, and a framed American flag with the caption "God Bless America" were all blatantly displayed. He reportedly complained to the school and the district, but no action was taken until lawyers from the Freedom From Religion Foundation wrote a letter to the school. The school board commented that they were reviewing allegations with their legal team.
I am surprised, like thinking back to my experiences as a teacher, I am surprised that those sorts of things were not vandalized. But I mean, if they were up for months, I mean,
If there was no face, if there was no child or person pictured on them, there was no place to draw a mustache. So I'm not completely surprised that they weren't vandalized.
I don't know. I had one that was vandalized in my classroom where they just like drew the big red circle with the slash through it because they disagreed with what it was. So, I mean, I could see that sort of thing happening.
Oh, you taught some unruly little rebellious fourth graders. I found fourth graders to be, still interested in pleasing the teacher. And I think if this is going through, a kid saying, hey, dad, there are these there are these symbols up. We're a non-religious family. I thought my teacher wasn't allowed to have crosses and God bless America, you know, and through a family where you're able to say, you know what, let's try and get these taken down. I think you're right. You know, if you're able to talk with your fourth grader and say, we want to go through a legal process, we believe you're right. Then I think that's a real nice way of doing it.
Absolutely. But I wonder, like, I mean, it did go on for months. Was it the kid that talked to the family, or was it like parent-teacher conference and the parents going in going, how has this been going on for so long? Like, how long have these been up, sort of thing? I mean, I'm not sure, but I mean, that was sort of my take, was that the parents realized it, not necessarily the kid.
I think it could be either way. You could go in curriculum night and see your kid's classroom in the very beginning of the school year and say, that's not supposed to be that way. And, you know, or it could be a kid saying, my teacher has these crosses up in a poster about vices and virtues. What does vices mean, Dad? What do virtues mean? Right. You don't really see that oftentimes in, you know, fourth grade level classroom, just as part of the English language arts curriculum. Right.
Right.
Those are very religiously flavored words and things like that. Now, Dan, growing up, did you have any of these kinds of, I'm sure that you had Pledge of Allegiance and I'm sure you had American flags, but did you have any of these, like, linking these religious symbols in your childhood classroom experience?
To some extent. In our music classes, I do remember singing God Bless America. I remember singing Christmas carols, you know, that specifically mention biblical stuff. I remember our school having a nativity scene in one of the hallways.
That's not an okay thing anymore, unless it's paired with lots of other different religious holiday displays.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about, you know, was it a student or a parent coming in? I would have to say it doesn't really matter. Students, when they see this kind of stuff around them all the time, sort of assume that it's the norm. Just sort of assume that, oh, yeah, this is normal. This is fine. They may not know that it's not okay, that it's not constitutional. So in my opinion, does it matter if it's a child complaining or their parents complaining about it? No, it doesn't matter.
I mean, I don't remember any sort of religious stuff when I was in elementary school. But of course, at the time I was religious, so I would have just seen it as being normal. But I do know that there have been some campers at Camp Quest Northwest that have expressed that sort of thing, and they're more attuned to it than I was at that age.
I think that anytime we have children who are able to observe and advocate upon, you know, for themselves, it's a wonderful experience. And when they can't advocate for themselves, that's why we have groups that are able to go in and advocate on behalf of children and separation of church and state. This is Ask an Atheist. We'll be back after the break.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
And welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm hosting today, Becky Friedman. You can give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC or email us at questions@atheist.radio. Today we're going to go to, I think, down to Alabama, because you know what? Roy Moore's back.
Oh, no.
The disgraced, ever-loved Roy Moore.
So No more.
You know, Roy Moore's been on our radar and Ask an Atheist for a long time, even before he started his Senate race, because, you know, the guy was yanked off his bench, you know, his court bench several times. And now, now he is yet just another disgraced Senate candidate. Roy Moore turned to Facebook to beg supporters to help him cover $100,000 in expected legal fees, saying that he was having trouble making ends meet. Lee Korfman, who alleged that a 32-year-old Moore had sexually assaulted her when she was 14, is suing him for defamation. Moore characterized Korfman and her legal team as being motivated by unholy forces of evil over whom God will prevail. Moore also stated that gays, lesbians, and transgenders had joined forces with those who believe in abortion and sodomy, and warned that Christians must take a stand against covetous, unthankful, unholy, and incontinent lovers of pleasure. Incontinent lovers of pleasure, in case you didn't get that. Moore suggested that adding to the $32,000 of funds that he's already raised would help him fight in the battle for the heart and soul of the nation. So, you know, both of us kind of laughed a little bit here. But Bridget, you initially had this reaction of disgust. What did you find? I mean, there's a lot to find disgusting about Roy Moore, but what specific?
There's a lot going on here that is really gross. But what got me was the gays, lesbians, and transgenders. I can't even say that without my skin crawling, because it is so degrading. To just completely eliminate the aspect that these are people. We don't say what we used to say in the 50s. We now say people of color. We do that now for people who are transgender as well.
So you say trans folks or transgender people, or, you know, folks in the LGBTQ community. Roy Moore is not really known for being super down with LGBTQ folks, especially with his religious zealotry. So it's not super surprising that he wouldn't be completely up on the, current way of being most respectful, you know, when talking to fellow humans, right?
No, I definitely think that this is exactly what I would expect him to say, but it still makes my skin crawl.
A little bit later on, Dan, you were kind of like all a Twitter. You were giggling a little bit with some of these things. What was the particular funny part here? Because there's a lot of things that are disgusting, a lot of things that are funny.
Right. The one that's funny to me is just the phrasing, incontinent lovers of pleasure. It reminds me of like when you see those guys with a list of all the horrible things on the sign. And then, you know, it's like sinners and liars and all this.
Video game players.
Just something oddball.
Wearing yoga pants.
And this is the one where it's like he's listed off all of these things, and incontinent lovers of pleasure. Well, you know what? That is a very specific fetish group.
Before you get more specific on that particular group of individuals, we can chuckle and laugh about that, but really what this looks to me as is a very backhanded and vicious slam at gay individuals. When someone like Roy Moore sees gay men as merely those who engage in sexual practices that he finds that are abominations, rather than whole individuals who have, you know, wants, needs, and families just as everyone else, it's a nasty way of referring to people that he's actually saying are unholy enemies.
I guess I was just giving him too much credit.
So the other thing here about Roy Moore is that he's talking about Christians standing up against all of these folks in the battle for the heart and soul of the nation. So hold on just a minute. We could see how many boxes we three or any of our listeners or atheists or humanists could check off individually. But we're looking at gays or lesbians or trans folks, people who believe in abortion and sodomy, people who are covetous or unthankful or unholy. I mean, I'm definitely unholy. We can say what we want about incontinent lovers of pleasure, but we are all the people that good Christians must take up arms against to battle for the heart and soul of the nation.
I feel like we might be in the majority.
Yeah.
Like the things that Roy Moore considers to be the sort of abomination that the real heart and soul has to take arms against.
I mean, we are the heart and soul of this country.
Right.
I do gotta clarify. He doesn't actually mean take arms as in like, hold up your guns. He does say stand up against. And what's Roy Moore's way of standing up against? Thankfully, it's not through guns.
I believe it's sitting on a horse.
Well, what's his way that he's asking his followers to
do? He wants money.
Yeah, money.
It's all about the money.
Surprise.
If you hate gay people, give Roy Moore money. Because that makes sense.
Right.
I mean, suppose it makes as much sense as hating gay people to begin with. But, this is not something new for Roy Moore. He, you know, he is a religious zealot that believes in you know, the coming of the next kingdom through American government, and he sees folks like us and folks that we are allied with as people that are stealing the heart and soul of the nation and preventing his you know, his Christian dominion from being formed. But at the root of this is someone who, as a 14-year-old girl, was acted on in a predatory manner by a man early in his career. So not only is it gay folks, is it people who are in favor of abortive care for girls and women, but also 14-year-olds who don't submit to the sexual advances of 32-year-old powerfully elected you know, men in government. That, to me, is where my disgust comes in.
For sure. Although I will say he said that God will prevail, but I think that Alabama told him a resounding no on that.
Yeah.
in their
election. Didn't prevail in his election, so how's God prevailing? And you know what? If God's going to prevail against us forces of evil anyway, then why does, I mean, is God taking your, you know, Kickstarter fundraiser? Like what do we need to give you money for?
Right.
If
exactly.
God's going to prevail anyway. I mean, I'm not advocating that we give money to God, but I'm certainly not going to advocate that we give money to Roy Moore. So no more Moore. And if this guy stays broke, you'd think that, you know, we'd be, you know, good riddance with his antics. But no, still in Alabama.
Oh, Alabama.
He might still get his way. He might still get his way because Alabama lawmakers have passed a bill that paves the way for a state constitutional amendment to allow 10 commandment displays in public spaces. The bill's main sponsor, Senator Gerald Dial, argued that the Decalogue might have the possibility of dissuading potential school shooters if it were posted prominently in schools. The bill requires a statewide ballot vote in the November general election. The proposed amendment would require that the Judeo-Christian document be displayed in an educational or historical manner that complied with constitutional requirements, and would prohibit the state from using funds to defend any court challenges. So Roy Moore, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, gets kicked off the bench for refusing to take out his own Ten Commandments. He lost his election. So what does the local folks do? They say, we're going to get not just Roy Moore's own huge Decalogue back in a courtroom. We're going to put it in every school across the state.
Because that's what schools need to prevent shootings. They need more God, not fewer guns.
So for the record, where we're at right now is we have to arm the teachers. We have to take all guns without due process.
But still arm
the
teachers.
But still have the teachers armed somehow. Then we have to put the Ten Commandments on the wall. And and we have to incessantly correct people on whether or not an AR-15 is a machine gun or simply a semi-automatic with a large magazine, not a clip.
Is that where we are right now?
Yeah, if we do all these things, we'll prevent school shootings, apparently.
Oh.
Is there even something in the Ten Commandments that says thou shalt not shoot your school peers and teachers and fellow educators?
Well, there's thou shalt not kill.
No, it's thou shalt not murder now, because they had to be able to justify war and military actions.
And executions. Right.
Well, so. Which Ten Commandments are we talking about? Because they're listed, actually, several times throughout the Hebrew Scriptures. So, and they differ, actually. Like, you know, one of them combines the first and the second commandments, and the you know, of the I'm the Lord your God, you can't have any other gods before me, and the other one has them as two separate commandments. So which commandment are we doing here?
You need to have both to do a compare and contrast. That would accomplish the educational aspect of displaying it.
And if we post both versions and make sure that everyone has a boiling kettle, then we can finally stop all these chefs from showing up at schools and mass boiling lambs in their mother's milk.
You had lamb in your school cafeteria?
Well, no, but
I had little pink slime, hamburgers, and
I had the pizza with mostly cardboard and oil.
Was it the hockey puck round pizza or was it the square pizza?
It was the square pizza. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty much cardboard and oil.
So,
just decrying the school lunch program here. I rather like it. I know it's flavorless and nutritionally awful, but it was good.
I just remember trying to get the grease off of the pizza with the napkins and running out of napkins.
Well, maybe if we fully funded, let's see, Ten Commandments for all of the schools, then we could use any funds left over from Roy Moore to have adequate pizzas. What do you guys think of that?
That works.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Let's funnel this money into school nutrition.
$32,000 raised to Roy Moore will go a long way towards feeding Alabama's children. She said while shaking her head. It's a difficult thing to be looking at as a teacher to say, you know what? We don't need to have adequate nutrition or wraparound services for children. We don't need to have, examine gun culture or gun control in our states and those laws. We don't need to have intervention services.
We don't need to have dry erase markers.
Right.
Or paper or books.
All we need to do is have the Ten Commandments up there and no school shootings will happen.
Right.
Don't forget guns for teachers.
But maybe instead of putting up Ten Commandments, it would be nice to put up a conflict resolution thing, or maybe suggestions on how to, make better friendships or.
Well, here's the thing, Bridget. What I have on my walls of my classroom are student work and note taking methods and note taking strategies, problem solving skills, higher order thinking questions, the who's, the what's, the where's, the why's, the hypothesize. We have mnemonic devices for critically evaluating the credibility of sources, because we don't want kids to be duped by memes and news that has a lot of bias in them. But you know what? That can all be put aside as soon as I put up in my classroom a Ten Commandments a poster, because that will that all that we want to do is to prevent school shootings, because that's the only function of schools is to be armed bunkers.
Just to make sure that they don't die while they're there.
Forget all this, critical thinking skills or problem solving or, eating nutritious foods or having PE classes in music and things like that. Yeah, man, just Ten Commandments should take care of everything, right?
Everything.
God and guns.
Well, that's something that I'm not completely clear on, not completely certain on. And, there's one more thing I'm not completely certain on. And this is a question that comes to us from Mike from Facebook. And he asks, how does the Heisenberg uncertainty principle prevent God from observing the universe? I looked at this and I thought, it's not the Heisenberg uncertainty principle that prevents God from observing the universe. It's the fact that I don't think God exists that prevents God from observing the universe. That's the thing. What's to prevent the magical unicorn being ridden by a leprechaun from observing the universe?
But no, Becky, if God is real, then this would explain why terrible things keep happening around the world, is because God is so focused on, finding out where the atoms are, the electrons are.
You have to clue me in here. What do atoms and electrons have to do with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle?
I can take this one. So I think what we have here is a misunderstanding. They seem to be referring to the observer principle, which is often mistaken for the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. The observer principle states that you change the outcome of an experiment by observing it. And mostly it applies to quantum particles. So you can't view an atom in its present state using something like a scanning electron microscope, because the scanning electrons that you're using to scan the atom and develop an image are changing the state of the atom, changing the state of its protons, neutrons, and electrons. So you can't see it the way it is, because observing changes the outcome. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle, on the other hand, says a little bit more about a dichotomy, that you can't know the speed of an object and its location at the same time. And again, applies mostly to subatomic particles. If you are trying to figure out where an electron is and how fast it's going, you can't do both. And the reason is, if you know where it is at this specific point in time, then you've kind of frozen time and you can assume that its speed is zero to get a precise location. If you know how fast it's moving, then it has to be traveling through space. And as long as it's moving, it's not in one place that you can identify. So the Heisenberg uncertainty principle is like a limit to the precision of how well you can know how fast a thing is and also where it is.
So how does that mean that God is chasing, I don't know, looking for all these electrons or something?
So if God is real and is trying to fight this Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that's why terrible things keep happening, because God is so focused on trying to figure out where these electrons are that they're just like distracted and they can't like help dying children
around
the world.
Kid with leukemia? Sorry, busy chasing an electron.
Yeah, too busy watching all the electrons and giving myself a headache trying to figure out where they are and how fast they're moving.
Yep.
To me, this really smacks, though, of a particular kind of theistic argument, which is co-opting the language of science to try to make an argument. And that is, it's disingenuous, but two, it usually shows that the person who is arguing against a point doesn't actually understand the point they're arguing against. In science, we call this is a great example of not even wrong. That is to say, in order to be wrong, you have to have a basic understanding of what's going on and be incorrect in your assumption about it. To be not even wrong, you don't have to know anything.
So like what would be wrong versus not even wrong?
Sure. Okay. So if I say that the Earth is a complex oblate spheroid, I would be correct to the current understanding of science. Maybe in a few more years, I'll find out I was a little bit wrong. Like 10 years ago, if I thought the world was a sphere, I would have been a little bit wrong. If I say the world is flat, I'm definitely wrong. If I say that the world is a lime-flavored Mobius popsicle, I'm not even wrong.
It sounds delicious.
I want the world to be a lime-flavored Mobius popsicle. If I just wish hard enough, will it come true, Dan?
I don't know. The cool thing about it, though, is you wouldn't have to ever flip it over. You just lick the same side.
And there you go. That's you can lick the same sides of your popsicles. You can chase electrons, and everything will just be as you wish it, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of uncertain about all this stuff. I don't know. Maybe in the break we'll go and we'll chase down some electrons.
Or we could just get back to current events.
Oh.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. We were chasing electrons in our last segment. We are going to go to current events.
Har har.
And this is actually, this one is kind of bonkers. It does have to do with guns. It peripherally has to do with kiddos and schools and things like that, but mostly by some baffling religious beliefs. And this is, members of the World Peace and Unification Sanctuary in Pennsylvania participated this week in an elaborate mass wedding ceremony where dozens of couples exchanged or renewed wedding vows while clutching AR-15 rifles. Many worshippers wore crowns fashioned from bullets. The Unification Sanctuary, led by Sean Moon, is an offshoot of the Unification Church movement that was founded by Sean's father, Sun Myung Moon, in the 50s. The younger Moon's church used rifles as symbols of the biblical rod of iron referenced in the Book of Revelation, and the congregation contended that their God-given right to keep and bear arms was necessary to bring about a kingdom of peace police. Let me just repeat that again. A kingdom of peace police and peace militia, and to defend themselves against sickos and psychopaths. Now, guys, I did not grow up in any kind of Christian faith, and I'm not super familiar with the Book of Revelation. Can you help me understand this rod of iron thing going on?
Yeah, sure. So in the Book of Revelation, it's stated that those who follow the true Christian path, the teachings of Jesus, will be given a rod of iron or scepter of iron, depending on the translation, with which they will shatter other nations like pottery.
So like Yikes. take your, you know, skull is kind of like a clay pot, you know, and if you thwack a clay pot with an iron rod, it'll, you know, shatter into a bunch of pieces. And if you take an AR-15 rifle and you fire a bullet into it, you know, the skull might shatter into a lot of pieces. I can see the comparison here, but how does this make any sense about bringing a kingdom of peace?
A peace militia.
Oh, right. Okay. I must have.
Militia.
Was this also
they didn't
part
say
of
kingdom of peace? They said peace police, peace militia.
What is the kingdom of peace? Was this also kingdom of peace police and peace militia? Is this also a revelation thing? Is this a Christian thing that I, just as someone who did not grow up in a Christian faith, just am you know, not aware of?
No. This is This is what I would call the sickos and psychopaths, actually.
Oh, so take in their words. All yeah. right. You know, one thing that stuck out to me is their God-given right to keep and bear arms. Growing up in the faith that I did grow up in, we have the commandment of keep the Sabbath holy, right? Remember and keep the Sabbath holy. And that's a real far cry from keep and bear arms, right? One is God's asking you to do something. One is God is giving you something through the Constitution to right. to be a clay pot shatterer.
Right. The God-given right always puzzles me. Because, I mean, if you look at the First Amendment, it talks about, you know, the state can't endorse any one religion. Then in the Second Amendment, they talk about the right to bear arms and a well-regulated militia, etc.
It doesn't say God in the Second Amendment.
No, it doesn't. No. And so when people say, my God-given right to keep and bear arms, like, well, wait, you may be misunderstanding both the Bible and the Constitution. This isn't a surprising situation, but it's worth noting.
Maybe they're actually polytheistic and believe that the founders and the framers of the, you know, country and the framers of the Constitution were gods, and they're just polytheists, and they believe that those... No? Am I off on this one?
Yeah,
I think you're stretching here.
Okay. Yeah. So this unification sanctuary, the World Peace and Unification Sanctuary, is led by Sean Moon. It is an offshoot of what many people...
Offshoot. Oh.
It is a faction. It is a faction of what many people have come to know as the Moonies, right? So you have the Unification Church or Unificationism that has some very strange practices and has a lot of followers in the Philippines and Korea and in the United States also. The cult-like nature of the Moonies that are known for doing mass weddings and things like this, they are generally considered by mainstream religious individuals and non-religious individuals as cult-like, and yet they themselves are distancing themselves from this Sean Moon's unification sanctuary. So these ones are too extreme for even the extreme cultists.
I can't believe they had a schism in just one generation. Amazing.
So not only are they just a little bit too out there, but the fact that they had this large demonstration with AR-15s, which happened to be the form of gun that was used by the shooter who killed 17 individuals in Parkland, Florida.
Kind of a lot of shooters, really.
Yeah, it's kind of a weapon of choice, really.
And, but the fact that, you know, that there were a lot of people demonstrating in this way actually had an effect on a local school. I did say it's peripherally related to school kiddos, right?
Right.
Well, this church was located in close proximity to an elementary school. And the fact that there were so many individuals with guns and that there was police activity because they were monitoring this, and there were protesters outside this church saying, you know, why are you glorifying the gun? It caused their school to go into lockdown. And it caused the children for the rest of their day to have to move to a different campus further away from this particular church and these activities.
Because nothing says peace like forcing children out of their school for the day.
Peace militia.
Yeah.
With guns.
So it kind of gets me thinking, you know, the U.S. Constitution seems so unassailable in so many ways, and it is used to set precedent. I wonder what it would say about our country if we could actually pass an amendment to the Constitution, you know, similar to the Bill of Rights, enshrining the right to free and compulsory education. You know, we have laws that say that, and we have case law through the court systems that say that every resident, you know, regardless of national origin, you know, every child resident shall be, you know, have the rights to, you know, public education. But what if we actually could enshrine that in the Constitution?
That's not likely to happen at this point with DeVos in power over our education system.
Hey, you know what? It would give her some ammunition, shall we say? to say, yeah, since everyone has the constitutional right to be in school, therefore we need to outfit everyone with rifles to defend against those grizzly bears, right?
Right. Or maybe we just, you know, put the bears as the guards to the school.
It's right to bear arms, not the arm bears.
I got it wrong again.
That's not what's going on here.
But we could finally stop this epidemic of mass maulings of bears just wandering onto school grounds and slaughtering people.
Well, you know, there's a perfect way to stop the bears from coming into school classrooms and terrorizing children.
Go on.
We just place a copy of the Ten Commandments in front of them.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Would we have to translate it into a language that they would understand?
I don't know. And I don't know that DeVos is really keen, or any of her supporters are keen on having anything other than English in public schools. Mm. So I'm not really sure.
So are we going to have to come up with men's woods and women's woods for the bears on the school grounds and enforce specifically which bears can go into which woods?
You know, this is actually a really good argument for single stall gender neutral woods, you know, very compartmentalized woods. So, so that anyone of any species variety would be able to. This is sounding in jest, but it is a very important thing to have anyone, you know, who is a school child or an employee feel comfortable using whatever bathroom they need to. And DeVos is, you know, supported by so many religious individuals that find, having something other than strict male-female divisions to be anathema to their worldview, that it's just, it's a thing that I really wish that we as a government and a society could get over. So I don't know what we're going to do about the bears or the guns or the Ten Commandments, but I hope that the courts will rule on the right side of it. We as atheists often joke about these things. We think about these things. But how long really have we been joking and thinking about these things?
Oh, dear.
We actually have an email. Michael, who contacted us at atheist.radio through our email question form, he asked, if men created God, why did no one challenge them or disagree with them for thousands of years until the introduction of the Big Bang Theory? Why didn't atheism originate at the time of theism, as well as another origin story for mankind? By the way, atheos in 5th century BC means without gods, not a disbelief in existence. Well, thanks, Michael, for that little etymology exercise there. We, as atheists, are aware that having the prefix A before something means without or lacking in. So, you know, someone who has apathy is without pathos, and someone who is amoral is without morals or lacking in morals, and someone who is an atheist is just, you know, lacking a belief in God. We get that. Right. We don't contend otherwise.
And sometimes the etymological literal meanings of words aren't actually the accepted modern meanings. I'd like to point out the vegetarian versus humanitarian words here for an example of that.
Yum, yum. So, but besides the little vocabulary lesson here, Michael, if men created God, I'm assuming that you're thinking that it's not just dudes, that we're talking about, you know, that the God idea or God belief came to be in different human cultures. You know, why did no one challenge those ideas or disagree with those ideas for thousands of years? Michael, I hate to inform you of this, but what did we say for the earth and the popsicle stick? What did we say? It's a little
not
bit wrong.
Even wrong.
Oh, not even wrong.
Not even wrong, Michael.
I mean, when I looked at this email, it was like it's always been fought. I mean, it was the default before religion, right?
If there was a time at which point humans created beliefs in God, there must have been a time before that when they hadn't. And so, you know, why hadn't anyone challenged them? Well, because the belief in God was the challenge, right? So, but I do got to give Michael a little bit of credit for even hypothesizing that humans invented this God idea and God belief, because many people who are theists are very, very against even hypothesizing or positing that that was a thing. But many of us who are atheists or anthropologists or individuals who look at human cultures know that and can observe that these theistic beliefs developed as part of different cultures and societies.
But we did do some research to get like specific examples, and it got to the point where it was like we were running out of time.
Running out of time and running out of space to be able to say how many challenges were there.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot. The history of atheism goes back to at least the 6th century BCE. Those are the earliest writings that we have of an atheistic nature.
Whoa, hold on a sec. Michael said BC in his question. You're giving this BCE thing. What are you talking about?
Oh, just before the Common Era.
Okay, Common Era, because BC before Christ. Not all of us want to center our timekeeping around the existence of a person that we don't worship as God.
Right. Okay. Right. So the terms that we're using scientifically now are BCE, before the Common Era, and CE, Common Era, instead of AD.
And sociologically as well as scientifically, just in history and social thought. Okay. Go on.
So as early as the 6th century BCE, Xenophanes, a Greek, suggested that if horses and cows had hands, they would likely craft gods in the shapes of horses and cows. And it just sort of goes to show that people even back then thought, people are sort of making this stuff up for their own ideas, for their own image.
I really love that, because I think it's echoed in a lot of our observations and beliefs, that for many of us, if we had an experience, if we grew up religious and we have an experience where we believe that we hear the voice of God or we see God in a vision, it comes to us in exactly the religious form in which we were raised. Someone in India is going to envision a message from God in a different way of someone, in sub-Saharan Africa, or in a Burmese animist tradition, or in a Christian tradition.
Right. In the 5th century BCE, Anaxagoras, another Greek, said that the sun was not, in fact, the wheel of Apollo's chariot, but a large fiery mass that he correctly guessed was much larger than the Peloponnese.
The Peloponnese, meaning, just that whole area. And
right.
Said, this is, no, we think the sun's really, really, really big, and probably not something from God.
Right.
Okay.
In the 5th century, Diagoras of Milos was sentenced to death for being a godless person. So there's a record of an atheist. Maybe why people didn't talk about it very much in this time, maybe why we have so many or rather so few records of atheists, is that it was dangerous for them to talk about. It wasn't that they weren't there. It's that publicly speaking on this stuff could get you killed.
Yeah, when you're going against the state, there is definitely an inherent risk to your life and your family or your property or something that might keep it a little under wraps for most people.
Absolutely. Even one of the world's most famous philosophers, Socrates, in 399 BCE, was accused of atheos and sentenced to death. But the list just sort of goes on and on. Leucippus and Democritus in the 5th century said that the world is a chance movement of atoms moving in infinite space.
That sounds really sciencey.
It really was. And actually, it's their ideas that is the reason that we call an atom an atom. Their understanding of it was the smallest thing that you could make something else out of was an atom. We now know that that's not the limit, but at the time that we decided the smallest pieces of elements are atoms, that was our best understanding, was that things didn't get any smaller. Now we know that they do. They're subatomic particles, electrons, neutrons, protons, etc., and then particles that make those up too.
Well, yeah, the electrons that God has to go around chasing all the
time. Right, yes, of course.
Okay.
In about 480 BCE, in the play Bellerophon by Euripides, the protagonist shouts, "Doth someone say that there be gods above? There are not. No, there are not. Let no fool led by the old false fable thus deceive you." Another Greek playwright, Aristophanes, wrote in Nights in 380 BCE, "Shrines, shrines, surely don't believe in the gods. What's your argument? Where's your proof?"
These are super provocative things.
Very.
And speaking to that, I don't want to believe in this particular thing, whether it's a shrine or whether it's in modern times, a miracle cure. We want to see evidence. We want to see proof for it. I think that that's not only the birth of atheism, but that's some really good evidence for, skepticism being something that's very old to our minds, way predating, the coming together of the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, certainly. And it's not just in Western cultures. In Buddhism, Taoism, certain sects of Hinduism and Jainism, we see atheist ideas. In the 4th century CE, Ishvara Krishna created the dualistic atheist tradition of Samkhya Karika. In an Islamic culture in the 9th century, Ibn al-Rawandi said that belief in gods was contrary to reason and must be rejected. In Scandinavia in the 13th century, Hrafnil said, "I think it is folly to have faith in the gods." And even in the 17th century, the philosopher Baruch Spinoza said that basically God didn't intervene at all in the running of the world, but that everything could be explained by natural laws, and that was how the universe worked.
So why didn't atheism originate at the time of theism as well as another origin story for mankind or humans, Michael? Well, sorry, you're not even wrong.
Right, because it originated first and in fact is documented throughout the history of theism.
I think that what's really nice is this is something that, you know, using your observations and the world around us to question the existence of God, you know, is something that is really inherent to us as humans, both within our history as, you know, as modern humans, and then at an individual level. One of my favorite educational posters, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's the scientific method is so easy, even a baby can do it. Have you guys seen this one?
I haven't.
Yeah. It's super cute. It starts with, you know, think about babies. It's how they interact with their world and learn about things. You know, a scientist, they want to, you know, use prior knowledge to develop a hypothesis, a testable question, and then, you know, conduct an experiment and report, gather their evidence and their data, report out their results and draw some conclusions and invite, you know, peer-reviewed study and replication, right? So what do babies do? You know, how do they test something?
They try to eat it.
Oh, yes.
They put it in their mouth. Yeah.
So, yeah, you got a baby, you know, says, oh, this kind of looks fun. I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to put it in my mouth. This tastes yucky, right? So how do babies then, you know, gather that info and then report out the results?
They usually cry.
Yeah. So you know, you have the screaming baby, you know, sharing their results with the world. This is icky. This is not food. But, you know, they draw their conclusion that this is not food and this is bad. But they also have to invite others to replicate their results. So you can imagine in a daycare environment, right? Your baby is wandering around with something and still clutched in their little toddler palm and, you know, give it to the next baby to yet again put in their mouth.
Try this awful thing.
I think we really see like the scientific method being used by a lot of people who are not aware that they're using the method. You smell something and it smells terrible, and the first thing you do is find somebody to show how bad this smells. Even in you know, around the bonfire, you might say, hold my beer, I want to try something. So you've got a plan, but your hypothesis so far is that if I do this thing, even though I'm testing it, I'm pretty sure I'll spill my beer.
Well, we'll see if we have any more beer spills or chased electrons or anything like that on the next episode of Ask an Atheist. Thank you to my co-hosts, Dan and Bridget, for joining me today.
You're very welcome, Becky.
Happy to be here.
Our music, as always, is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. You can give us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. Find us online at atheist.radio or on Facebook at facebook.com/AskAnAtheistWA. And email us questions at atheist.radio. We'll see you next week.